Tony Barnhart is, you know him. He's Mr. College Football. He's on Twitter at Mr. CFB, and he joins us now. Mr. College Football, how are we hanging in there?
Yeah, it's all good. You know, we're hunkered down here in a little Dunwoody, Georgia, and doing our thing and practicing social distancing and all that kind of stuff. So we are doing okay.
Absolutely. We all, as you know, I think we're all sort of feeling it. We are clamoring for the resumption of what we knew as our old lives, and a huge part of that from a morale standpoint is sports. And I think for a lot of us who are listening to the show right now, that means college football. I guess, how would your sort of outlook on college football, the possibilities of college football, how does your outlook today compare, 2 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago? Have you always been optimistic? Are you newly optimistic? Like, how do you just sort of feel about everything today?
I would say about a month ago, I was about 50-50 on whether or not we were going to be able to play, because there were just too many questions and there was so much unknown. I would say today, I wouldn't put a percent. I am very optimistic that we're going to play football. Now, what it's going to look like, are there going to be people in the stands? When are you bringing guys back to campus? All those things are going to get decided, but they haven't decided yet. But in terms of playing the game, I think we're going to have a college football season. I feel much more confident today than I did a month ago.
Saw you retweet this and wanted to ask you about it. The Kansas State AD, Gene Taylor, I believe, told Feinbaum this week that if the season's played without fans, that the TV revenue, for Big 12, for those schools alone, can get them through, right? Can float you till at least next year. And I truly believe that, Tony. My question is the other guys. We're in the middle SEC country, but Memphis, that program obviously outside the Power Five. Can those guys that don't get the millions and millions, it's six or seven as opposed to the 35 or 40 or 50 right. In some cases, can they survive? And enough so that the Power Five doesn't just break off, that there's reason for them to not break off?
I think they can survive for this reason. First of all, they weren't getting the money to begin with. They were getting some money, but they weren't getting the money the big schools
right,
were getting.
Not nearly.
So their budgeting was not set. Middle Tennessee is not set up with a $150 million athletic budget. Okay. Same thing for Memphis. Their budgets are smaller. Now, the problem for them is a big chunk of their budget is based on ticket sales.
Is tickets, yep.
That's the problem, whereas the big schools, they make a lot of money on tickets, but they make a lot of money in TV as
exactly.
well, and so they can adjust their budgets accordingly. So, it's not going to be easy for the group of five schools. There's no question. And you're going to see salary cuts. You're going to see, yep. in some cases, the elimination of sports. That's the last thing they want to happen, and they will cut and cut and cut to avoid doing that. But those are the things that you're concerned about.
No question. We all just want it back, Tony. There's no question about it. But in those terms, in terms of your gut, you've covered this for a long time. How likely is it that the Power Five at some point just breaks off, whether the NCAA likes or not? Going that way, how likely do you think we're headed down that road or not?
Well, I've always felt that that's eventually where we'd end up. But the issue has always been, what do you do about the basketball tournament? Because the NCAA does not run Division I football.
Right.
The commissioners run Division I football. But the NCAA does run the basketball tournament. Any time that the Power Five talks about splitting away, it's always, well, what do you do about basketball? I think it'll eventually happen. But as I was told a long time ago, as long as the Autonomous Five or the Power Five or whatever you want to call them, as long as they feel like they are getting done what they want to get done, mm-hmm. there's really no reason to split from the NCAA. The tension there was created when the smaller NCAA schools gathered to keep the big boys from doing what they wanted to do, like cost of attendance, stipend, and stuff like that. So I think everybody understands, as long as you leave the Power Five alone and let them conduct business the way they want to conduct business, there's really no incentive to leave the NCAA. If that changes and they are not allowed to do what they want to do, that's mm-hmm. when they say, see ya.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we're talking to Mr. College Football, Tony Barnhart, here on the show. While we're on the subject of you know, what different, you know, commissioners and conferences may be able to do, there was, I don't know, there was a movement like 2 or 3 weeks ago where, you know, like, and now that mostly, I think all 50 states are at least partially reopened, so maybe this,
right,
this conversation doesn't matter as much as it did 2 weeks ago. But there was a time where I think we were all ready to move on without the Pac-12, Tony. I think we were ready to leave the Pac-12 behind. If we got to play football without the Pac-12, then we will do that. Do you anticipate that still being on the table? And, like, how would that even work logistically, just not playing with an entire conference?
Well, it would absolutely – they don't want to do it. I've had conversations with Greg Sankey, commissioner of the SEC. He says, look, listen, we are tied together with the Pac-12 from a scheduling standpoint. We're all in the Power Five. That's not what we want to do. But if that state decides that their teams are not going to participate, their Pac-12, their four Pac-12 teams, then there has to be room for other schools and other conferences to do what's in their best interest. So the bottom line, I think we're waiting to hear on the governor, Newsom, what he said earlier this week and surprised some people when he said, okay, the pro guys, I know what I said about big crowds, the pro guys, you can play in California if you don't have fans at the game. Will he make the same decision on college football? If he does, the Pac-12 has an opening to play and to play teams like, you know, USC opens up with Alabama. So I think that remains to be seen. But listen, the other conferences are prepared to go without the Pac-12 if they don't want to play or told they can't play.
Yeah. All right. So some other sort of matters to touch on. Where are you on the one-time transfer waiver? You know, here sort of anecdotally in Memphis, the University of Memphis basketball really wishes that the one-time transfer waiver would have gone into effect for 2020. It doesn't sound as though that is going to happen. Do you believe that vote, whenever it happens, will go into effect? And sort of what do you make of the merits of a one-time transfer waiver just generally?
Oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. The reason it can't happen this year, I give you an example that I read somewhere. Let's just say the one-time transfer rule goes into effect for this season. Then the governor of California declares that no teams in his state can play college football. All right, 35 guys from USC get in the transfer portal, and they're gone to find a place to play. So from a practical standpoint, that's one reason. Plus, with everything else going on, they just didn't want to do it. Now, it is going to happen. It is going to happen, and it should happen, because what it does is it cleans up the process, and everybody understands what the process is before the season starts. And the coaches aren't going to like it, but you know what? This is one of those cases where the coaches are just going to have to get over it, because this makes – the NCAA botched the transfer portal system so badly by giving guys waivers who didn't deserve to get waivers. And then nobody understood what were you using to grant waivers and to make these evaluations. And nobody understood the process because it didn't make sense. What this does is, you get one bite at the apple without having to sit out a year. So everybody understands what the process is.
How high can Leach and Kiffin get Mississippi State and Ole Miss in the West?
Well, they can get – listen, Ole Miss went through a stretch where they beat Alabama 2 years in a row. Mississippi State was ranked number one under Dan Mullen and Dak Prescott. So, yeah, it can absolutely happen. Now, what I always tell my friends is you have to remember this. It's great that you go out recruiting, but last I checked, Alabama and LSU and Auburn and Texas A&M were still given scholarships, okay? So as long as those guys are given scholarships, you've got an uphill climb. But can it be done? Absolutely. You can put enough players together to have a very, very good team at those places. It's just hard to do it on a consistent basis.
You know, Tony, I think one of the more fascinating things that we're going to see this college football season, the conversation has shifted so rapidly. I think a month ago, you said, it's 50-50. Are we even going to be able to have college football without fans? Are we even going to be able to do that? Now testing has improved rapidly. It looks like it's going to continue to improve, and we'll be able to have that. And I think, you know, that conversation is happening about fans. There might be a way, for some places and some states to have, games with fans. but it'll be a process. It'll be a selective process. How do you think that will look in terms of who determining which fans get to attend and which don't?
Well, first of all, I believe, and I wrote this earlier this week, I think you've got to prove you can put on a football game and keep the players safe before you start worrying about fans. Okay, all of this stuff has to be done incrementally. You got to get the players back to campus. You got to test them. You got to make sure they're safe. You got to go through practice. Then you got to play a game with nobody in the stadium other than the folks that you need to open up the stadium. Then prove that you can do that and do all that. To me, once you've proven you can do all this other stuff, then you can have a conversation. All right, do we let fans in? If we let fans in, how many fans can we let in? And if we determine how many fans we're going to let in, how do we determine who gets to sit in those chairs? But it's, again, it is a process every step along the way. Some people will tell you, well, the students get first priority. Other people will tell you our long-time season ticket holders get priority. That, you know, I really don't care. And I think the schools do what they're going to do. The question is, whoever gets in the stadium, how are you going to keep them safe? How are you going to make them socially distant from one another? That, to me, those are the bigger issue. I really don't care who gets in.
Does it feel like to you, and maybe there, you know, there's not 100,000 Neyland watching this year, but it certainly feels like Pruitt's made some progress. Does it feel like they've turned the corner, Tennessee, in terms of getting back right to relevance in Georgia and Florida?
Well, the recruiting news has always got to be translated to the field. I don't care if you sign five number one classes in a row. If you don't get those guys ready to play and execute, then it's not going to work. The signs coming out of Tennessee are good and not surprising. I mean, I've told people over and over again, Jeremy Pruitt is a really good football coach. And people make these judgments about him because he's not, you know, this Hollywood glamour guy. The guy's a football coach, and he's good at it. And Tennessee's going to be fine. Everybody had to understand the roster he inherited. If you look at that roster, you had to go, this guy's got a lot of work to do. Uh-huh. And guess what? It takes time to put a recruiting apparatus into place.
Don't miss the Jason and John Show tomorrow at 11 a.m. on 92.9 FM ESPN.